Welcome to TTM Cast, the podcast for TTM autograph collectors, sponsored by sportscardforum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion, and by thetrovesportsden.com. Come and hang out and chat with baseball pros online. And now, here's our host, Jeff Baker.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM autograph collector. This is Season 2, Episode 33. It's Sunday, September 13th, and my name is Jeff Baker, and I welcome you to the program. We have a fun interview coming up with former Major League pitcher and closer, Mr. Dave Veers. Dave was a member of the Colorado Rockies, among other teams, Houston Astros, and Chicago Cubs, St. Louis Cardinals, and we had a great talk about his career, about collecting, and about TTMing. So hang in there and listen to our interview with Mr. Dave Spears. Once again, my name is Jeff Baker, and I am host for the program. You can find our podcast anywhere podcasts are found, including on TuneIn and on if you have an Alexa device, all you have to do is say, "Alexa, play TTM Cast podcast," and you can hear this podcast or all of our previous podcasts. We are on Spotify, on iTunes, we're on Apple, we're on Stitcher. We are all over the place. We have a forum on Sports Card Forum, so check it out. If you want to send any feedback, questions, comments, or simply are interested in being a guest on a future program, send me an email to ttmcast@yahoo.com. And now on to our first segment, which is always Baker's Dozen. It's just kind of a brain dump of what's been going on in the hobby in the last week or so. I want to welcome you back. We took last week off for the Labor Day holiday, but had a good week with the family. Had a bunch of returns that we'll be going over and shortly. But just a couple things first. I want to congratulate our raffle winners. These two gentlemen, Adam K and Sam K, no relation, were selected as winners of free card authentication or memorabilia authentication from North Carolina Authentication Services and Grading. That is their website is ncasg.biz. Mr. James York is the founder and president of the company. I just want to thank him for donating it. So Adam K and Sam K, congratulations. You each won authentication service. So information will be in the email to you later today. And we want to thank James York and his company, ncasg.biz. Check it out. They have it's a new company. They have authentication service that's really affordable. So please check it out. One other thing of note, Phil Jackson, the Hall of Fame basketball coach from the Lakers and the Chicago Bulls, put out a video today, and said that his grandson was signing his TTM request. So if you got a TTM request from Phil Jackson, it is probably fake, and you can do what you will with it. But sometimes, you know, that is the hobby that we are in, and the perils that we take sometimes sending out our stuff to get signed. And hopefully it is signed by the person that we intend to, but in this case, it was not. So, Phil, if you have a Phil Jackson autograph, it is a Phil Jackson autograph by his grandson. So, we're sorry if you got caught in that web. And that kind of wraps up Baker's Dozen. Our next show will be next Sunday, September 20th. I've been interviewing a bunch of people, so I have three or four interviews in the can, so to speak, already. So we're good all the way through probably the first week in October. I can't believe it. We're already fall is in swing. The NFL season is in swing. Today is first game of the NFL season. We got our fantasy drafts done. Hopefully you guys had good fantasy drafts, it's football season, so enjoy football season, and if NBA playoffs are starting to heat up real into the third round of conference finals are coming up, and my Celtics are playing, so look forward to watching the Celtics and Heat, and then the Lakers, and I think the Clippers are going to make it in the West. So it should be great NBA action coming up. NHL playoff action is coming up. It is in full swing as well. Baseball season, we've got about a month left. And football season starting, college football season starting as well. So we got a lot of sports after not having sports for a long time. So we're very happy about that. And hopefully you're enjoying it as much as I am. Now on to our Vern Rap Minute. Vern Rap Minute is dedicated to Mr. Vern Rap, who passed away prior to me sending out a TTM request, and I was embarrassed by sending it out to his family after Mr. Rap had passed away. So I do this as a service to my fellow TTMers, just to let people know who had passed away so they're not embarrassed in sending out a TTM request to someone who had passed. So we lost two Baseball Hall of Famers in the past week or 10 days. We lost Tom Seaver, of course, the great pitcher for the New York Mets, and Lou Brock, who was a fantastic outfielder with primarily the St. Louis Cardinals. Both of them were Hall of Famers, and we lost both of them. I think both of them were sick, very ill recently, and had not been signing for the last year or two. So I know both of them were great signers prior to that, but unfortunately we lost Mr. Lou Brock and Mr. Tom Seaver in the past week or 10 days. In the world of entertainment, we lost a couple people. We lost Ron Bell, who was co-founder of Kool and the Gang, Dina Riggs, who was played Emma Peel on the TV Avengers, and Kevin Dobson, who was on Kojak and Knots Landing. And lastly, we lost poker legend and world size of poker commentator, Mr. Mike Sexton. So my condolences to all their families for their losses. It's sad to see some of the people that you grew up with, that you idolized. I was a big Tom Seaver fan growing up, and I always liked Lou Brock, even though he did in my Boston Red Sox in 1967. I was always a big fan of Lou Brock growing up, so it's sad that we lost some of our heroes, and Mike Sexton. I always, I'm a very big fan of his, watching World Series of Poker on TV. So again, condolences to all their losses.
This week's TTM returns are brought to you by Sports Card Forum. Find players' addresses, see who's signing, and more, all for free. SportsCardForum.com, the ultimate in sports card trading and discussion.
And now it's time for this week's returns, last 10 days, actually. I've been a little lax in posting my returns on Instagram. I'm going to get these up in the next week or so. I've got a bunch of returns, all baseball. That I've been getting. Some of my older things have been coming in. I still have been kind of lax sending stuff out, but I got a few new ones that came back, and then I got ten returns this week. So in the last week or 10 days. So here are my returns, all in baseball. I got a Troy O'Leary on a 2000 Topps card and a 2000 in a. Let's see, what year is this one? 1999 Topps card, that's what I thought. So a 2000 Topps card and a 1999 Topps card. Signed a nice blue Sharpie, big signature on the front. Great to get Troy O'Leary, former Red Sox outfielder, to add to my collection. Somehow I did not have him in my collection, so it was nice to add a former Red Sox player. This one took, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks. Three weeks or so. So I got Dustin Hermanson on a 2000 Topps card. I actually, he's an Expos uniform on this card, and signed a nice big blue Sharpie. I was going through a bunch of 2000 cards, I don't know, about a month ago, and I sent out four or five just cards that I liked and the guys that were signing. So Dustin Hermanson, who was a pitcher for the Montreal Expos, signed on his 2000 Topps card, and that took probably about a month. I got Don Gullett, who was the former Cincinnati Red and New York Yankee pitcher. He signed his 76 and 77 Topps cards in light, kind of a light blue Sharpie. The 76 one right across the front, which is really nice. The 77 one kind of above where the facility signature was on the bottom. And I'm happy to get both these cards signed. I was a big Don Gullett fan growing up. I always liked pitchers growing up, and he was one of my favorites. I did not have I had a 78 Topps card for my set collection that I actually purchased. I hadn't been able to get him, but I saw that he was signing. I sent it to his home, and he returned it in less than a couple weeks. So I'm glad to add two more Don Gullett cards to my collection. I got a Chris Sabo card. It's a fan favorite. So it was really, really cool. Chris Sabo card in a nice blue Sharpie. And that one took probably like, I don't know, 3 months to get back. But I'm thrilled to add him to my collection. I got Rich Hand, the Texas Ranger pitcher, on a 1973 card, a great card. Looks like he's pitching against Bert Campanaris, and I actually love this card, 1973. This card number 398. He signed it in a black thin Sharpie, and it's really a nice, big, bold signature. And lastly, I got Craig Mitchell, who was a pitcher for the Oakland A's, on his 1978 card. He's also pictured Dennis Lamp, who I have signed, and Roy Thomas, for I have to send out, and Cardell Camper. I'm not sure if he's actually still with us, but I know Roy Thomas does sign, so I've got two signatures on the card now, and he signed it in a nice blue pen across the bottom where his picture is, and I've got to send this out to Roy Thomas, who pitched for the Houston Astros. So that kind of wraps up returns for the week. As I said, I've kind of been starting to send out some requests. I sent out a few last week. I'm going to try to send out a few more this week. To me, I probably went 3 or 4 weeks without sending out any requests. So I've been getting kind of one a day, which is nice. It's a nice return. I like actually look at in one a day, so I don't get flooded with returns, and I can kind of trickle in. So that wraps up returns for the week. And now on to our final segment, which is our interview segment. I had the pleasure of interviewing former Major League closer, Mr. Dave Veers, and we talk all about his Major League career, his stops, people that he faced, and some of the things that happened to him in his career, and playing in the playoffs with the Cardinals and the Cubs. We talk collecting and baseball history and TTMing. So hopefully you enjoy our interview with Mr. Dave Veers.
This week's interview is brought to you by the Trove Sports Den. Come and hang out and chat with baseball pros from past and present online. Visit thetrovesportsden.com and join in the fun today.
Joining us on the TTM Cast Hotline from his home in Colorado is 10-year Major League veteran, Mr. Dave Veers. Welcome to the program, Dave.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for having me.
You know, the first thing I look at when I see somebody that played 10 years is, did that 10 years go by really quick for you?
In hindsight, yes. At the time, it's a job, so you see it as, you know, you see it differently, I think. But, yeah, definitely in hindsight, it went by really fast. And I think because, you know, it took me 7 years to get to the big leagues. It was a little different for me, I think. I wasn't, you know, a top prospect and a phenom. And, you know, I definitely had to work my butt off to get there and to stay there for as long as I did. But, yeah, as you're playing, you know, like I said, it goes by, you know, not slow, but, you know, like I said, it's a job. After a while, you see it as a job, and that's kind of, you know, a little different.
You know, I mean, you had a great career. You played with the Astros, the Expos, which I'm jealous because I love the Expos unis, the Colorado Rockies, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Cubs. So you're kind of well traveled, but it must have been nice to be exposed to different locales and different clubhouses and different stadiums like that.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it's kind of crazy because my dad was in the Air Force when I was growing up, so I think it kind of had me, you know, prepared for every 2 or 3 years go somewhere new because we moved every 3 years in the Air Force, it seemed like. But at the time, you know, at the time you get traded, it's that kind of like that, you know, sometimes you feel great. Oh, yeah, another team wants you, but then you kind of heard that, you know, another team kind of gave up on you or didn't want you. But for me, I think every time I got traded is for a better situation. You know, I was 2 years in Houston, my first 2 years in the big leagues. And, you know, at the time the Expos needed a third baseman because Ken Caminiti went to San Diego. And, you know, Sean Berry is one of the best third bases on the market at the time. And obviously the Expos had him, and, you know, there's kind of like college. You go for 2 or 3 years and move on to make money. But, so, you know, he was obviously going to arbitration or free agency soon. So, you know, the Expos were trying to unload him. So, you know, I kind of stuck in Houston behind. We had a pretty young pitching staff at the time, especially in the bullpen. You know, myself, Todd Jones, John Hudak, Hampton, and Shane Reynolds, we're all rookies together. So we had a pretty young staff for the most part. So I got traded to Montreal and got to set up for Mel Rojas and Urbina. So kind of established myself a little bit. Even though I had two pretty good years my first 2 years, I think I kind of had to get away from some of the other stuff, you know, just to make a name for myself.
Sure.
And so I went to Montreal for 2 years. And like I said, it's kind of like college. You know, you go there for 2 or 3 years and you leave to make money. So at the time I was going to arbitration, and Urbina was the first or second year player as our closer. And, you know, they aren't going to pay their setup guy more than they paid their closer. So one of my best friend at the time, you know, was Daryl Kyle, and he signed with the Rockies as a free agent. And, you know, one thing he asked was, you know, what's the Rockies' plans? And they're like, well, we need relief help. We need this. We need that. He's like, well, you know, my buddy Dave Veers wants out of Montreal. So, you know, a week later, they traded for me. So I came to Colorado, and, you know, I started closing here. My end of my first year, I started closing, and I had like 8 or 9 saves towards the end, at the end of the year. And, you know, the next year I had 31 saves, and, you know, at the time was a team record. So, you know, so kind of every situation that kind of, you know, was better for me. Then from Colorado, Daryl and I both got traded to St. Louis, where, you know, if you're playing St. Louis, you know, it's, you know, baseball heaven. So I didn't realize what baseball was until I got to St. Louis. You know, the first day of spring's like, you know, don't plan on going home in October. You know, we plan on playing, you know, through October and as long as we can. You know, so, you know, most seasons you look for, you know, September 30th is when you go home. So,
yep.
You know, just that different mentality of playing for the Cardinals in that city. And, you know, so that's where I realized what real baseball was really about. It wasn't just, hey, let's play your 162 games and, you know, hope for a good year and, you know, sign a contract for next year. It was like, yeah, we plan on, you know, winning and, you know, playing through October. So, like I said, so even though I was traded a lot, at the time I was kind of bummed, but every time it was for a better situation for me, you know, personally or family-wise. So I enjoyed it.
Did you have a young family at the time, moving your wife and your kids around?
Yeah, we did. It's kind of funny because that's kind of how I figure out where my kids, you know, where I had my kids, because my daughter was born was with the Expos. My first son was born with the Rockies. My next son was born with the Cardinals. My next son was born with the Cubs. So if they ask me, hey, where are you at this time in your career? It's like, I can't think, okay, which son was that? Is that, you know, that stage of my career? You know, who was born at that city? So
now you didn't name your kids Banks and Usual and Walker, right?
Close. because when I came to, you know, I've always been a fan of the game and of the history of the game. You know, luckily when I came to Colorado, me and Jerry DePoto, who is the GM of Seattle now, became really good friends, and he was a huge baseball history buff as well. And he taught me a lot, and I kind of appreciated the game. So it's by no coincidence, you know, my one son is named Ty after Ty Cobb, and my other son's name is Tris after Tris Speaker. So my two favorite hitters of all time are those two guys. And my two favorite pitchers are Walter Johnson and Christy Mathewson. But when my next son was born, my wife wasn't going for a Christy Veers or a Walter Veers. It didn't quite have that ring to it. So my daughter's name is Taryn. We have Ty and Tris. We had 3 T's. So we thought, well, let's just have one more T. And, you know, our dog's name was Tug. So I couldn't name my other son Tug. So there's no real cool T names in baseball. So we just took a name Cabin and threw a T on it and made it Tavin. But my kids, my two boys are named after, you know, my favorite hitters. So I do enjoy, you know, that part of the game. And, you know, I'm sure if I played with the Cubs earlier or St. Louis, I would have had a Stan or a, you know, or Ernie Bay or an Ernie or somebody just after the guys I met. But we're pretty set with the Ty and Tris.
My son was born. We named my family name, but then when my second one was coming, if it was going to be a boy, it was definitely going to be Theodore Williams Baker.
Nice.
But he ended up being a girl.
Oh, dang it.
So we named her Ruthie, not after Babe. So we
that's not too bad, though.
Thanks. Now, pitching in Colorado, you had great success there, and that can be kind of a graveyard for pitchers. What do you attribute your success to pitching well in Colorado?
You know, making quality pitches obviously helps. But the problem with Coors, I think, is guys come here and try and beat it, you know, and no one's going to beat Coors Field, you know, per se. You go out there and just, you know, pitch your best and, you know, hope for the best. But, you know, like I said, I had some rough games here for sure. I think my game was more conducive to Coors because I was more of a sinker ball, ground ball, you know, split finger guy versus, you know, a high four seam fastball, big curveball, which don't tend to work at Coors. You know, but yeah, I think just my pitching style was more conducive to somewhat success here at Coors. But even though, you know, like I said, I took my lumps for sure. But I was, you know, it's fun. It's still one of my favorite stadiums, actually, too, because it's a beautiful ballpark. And even though it's like the fourth oldest in baseball now, it's still, you know, an outstanding ballpark.
You got to play all with all National League teams, but I'm sure you were playing when interleague play was involved, right?
Yes, sir. I started, I think, 99, 2000. I think I only started in the 99, if I remember right. So I think, you know, with the Rockies, I think we went to Seattle, we went to Anaheim. So that was kind of cool. So with interleague, actually, take that back, with Montreal it started, because we went to New York, and I was there for Don Mattingly Day against the Yankees, so that was kind of cool.
That must have been really cool.
Yeah, that was awesome. And then in Baltimore, we got to play against the Orioles. You know, anytime you get to play against Cal Ripken and, you know, obviously those guys, it's kind of cool. So luckily, I did get the beginning of interleague play. You know, I kind of wish sometimes my career would have, you know, which is kind of odd. I'm surprised I never did pitch for an American League team, because I had pretty good success against them, maybe because I never faced them that often. But I am kind of surprised now, thinking back, that I never did go to an AL team just because of my success I had in the league.
Yeah, I mean, it might be just like football. You know how some in football, if you play in a division, you seem to play in against with three other teams in the same division. It's, you know, people see you pitch and you have a success against them, and like, hey, I want to experience that on the other side.
So it's kind of funny. I agree. But that's what people look at things. Well, this guy did really good against us, so we should go get him. But if they're smart, like I remember my last year, I pitched, I think, 04, 03. You know, I had, you know, like a 4.5 ERA, which, if you ask me, was one of the worst years of my career. So I was battling some injuries. But I gave up like 7 runs against the Astros and 1 1/3. And I'm like, look, to take up that one game against the Astros, and I have, you know, I have pretty good numbers. So if the Astros were smart, they would have signed me, because I did good against everybody else. I did good against everybody else except for them.
Yeah, true.
You know, so that's kind of how the thinking should be. You know, if a team kills a guy, then they should go get him because he did well against everybody else. But I did. It's kind of interesting how, like I said, some teams have your numbers, and you know you can throw whatever you want to some guys, and you can get them out.
Did you, was there a stadium or mound that you really enjoyed pitching on, and one that where you were like, oh, this place has my number, so to speak, or that?
You? I'm trying to, nowhere really stood out where I can think I'll take that back, actually. I'll think about that last game against the Astros. When they moved into, back then it was Enron Field, and then it's been Minute Maid, and who knows what since.
Yep.
My first like 7 or 8 games, I threw, you know, shutout baseball at Enron, which, you know, if you see that ballpark, it's what, 305 down the line, and you know, it's not much of a pitcher's park, you know, after the Astrodome. But for some reason, I did pretty well at Enron Field, and trying to think where I struggled. I think Milwaukee, I struggled in the Brewers, and I think they were new to the National League at the time, and. Just my style of pitching, they give me problems because they would take pitches off me and make me work. So I tend to, you know, give up runs against those guys because they wouldn't chase my borderline pitches and make me throw strikes.
Yeah, and they always have pretty good hitters on that squad.
Yeah, yeah, they were bad. That's back in the 90s with that, you know, Sexton and
he's a big guy, huh?
Yeah, Jeffries. Was it Jeff? I can't think of his name. His first name is Jeff.
The outfielder, right?
What's that?
The outfielder. Jeffries, the outfielder?
Yes. Yeah, but they, you know, like I said, for some reason they gave me, you know, they gave, Loretta was there, but they gave me some fits for some reason. But yeah, it's crazy how that works. Some guys, I could throw whatever I wanted to, and they'd pop it out or hit a rocket to somebody, and then, you know, other guys, they could just stick their bat out and get a base hit.
Did you have any personal rivalries that you really enjoyed facing a guy? Not necessarily the superstar, so to speak, but maybe somebody that you came up through minor leagues or a friend, you know, somebody that was a friend of yours?
Well, it's crazy because I played with, you know, drafted by the A's, went to the Dodgers, went to the Astros. So, you know, I had a lot of teammates along the way with all the teams I played for. You know, I think my favorite was probably against the Dodgers. No one in particular. I think just the team, because I was in AAA with them, and you know, we had meetings all the time. And I recall one meeting them saying, if one coach thinks you can play, you know, that you know over here, you know, you'll always have a job type thing. And I was released a week later.
So you never believe what you hear, right?
Yeah. So obviously either no coach thought I could play or, you know, whatever. So, and my debut, ironically, was against the Dodgers, you know, so it's kind of cool, you know, that, you know, to pitch against a team that released me a couple of years before that.
Did you have any manager or coach that was kind of a mentor for you either coming up or even when you were in the major leagues?
For sure. AAA, Brent Strom, who's now the Astros pitching coach.
Yep.
He's been there for a while now, obviously. But yeah, he was my pitching coach in AAA with the Astros, and he taught me my split finger. Basically, you know, cause, you know, I had a decent arm, couldn't throw strikes very good, which probably, you know, reason why I spent 6 or 7 years in the minor leagues. But, you know, Brent really taught me, you know, how to pitch, worked on my splitty, you know, actually showed me the splitty. And, you look from, you know, when I started throwing that split finger, you know, to my rest of my career, it's, you know, obviously it changed my career. So definitely Brent Strom as a pitching coach. La Russa was unbelievable as a manager, obviously, to do what he did in his career. But, yeah, he was definitely.
Did you anticipate La Russa's moves after spending a little time with him, or was he?
He definitely a step ahead, you know, and he didn't go things by the book. He went by his gut, and he did. And when you have that many wins, obviously, you know, you can get away with that. You know, he had the luxury of, you know, going by his feeling or his gut or whatever. But yeah, he's definitely, you know, you could just see manager wise, he was, you know, step ahead, you know, but, he was great to, you know, obviously I'll always be indebted to Terry Collins too, because he gave me my first shot. You know, when they called me up to the Astros, after 7 years in the minors, you never thought you can get that call. And, you know, he was new to the Astros, and, you know, basically he's like, I don't care who, you know, who the bonus babies are, I want whoever's pitching the best. So,
what was that like, getting that call to get called up for the first time for the majors?
It was kind of weird because we were in Calgary playing the Mariners, AAA, and, this is 94. So the first month, I'm doing pretty well. Yeah, I think I give them a couple runs the first month. And we go to Calgary, which is known as not a very good pitcher's park either. So I have a rough night. I struggle a little bit. And the next day, the game's closed. And the sixth, seventh, eighth inning is closed. And I should be warming up and getting ready. And, you know, I'm not warming up. So I'm getting kind of mad. You know, I'm thinking, man, just one bad game after, you know, a good month, and, I lose my job already or whatever. So I'm kind of mad and kind of, you know, the bullpen coach can kind of see that I'm mad, and he kind of drops some hints. Hey, just relax, you know, things will be all right. You'll be fine. And, you know, there's some, you know, something's going down, you know, so basically kind of give me some hints that, you know, I'm not pitching because some moves might be going on. So after the game, so they're in, the big team was in L.A. So after the game's over, Rick Sweet was our manager. They called me into the office and said, hey, you know, nothing's done yet, but if they struggle tonight against the Dodgers again, you know, they're making some bullpen moves. So basically go back to your room, don't leave, you know, sit by the phone. So be in L.A., you know, 2 or 3 hours earlier ahead, so I had to wait till like 1 o'clock in the morning. Wow. Before I got that phone call and said, yeah, you're going to the big leagues tomorrow morning. So it's pretty awesome. After seven years in the minor leagues, it was pretty cool to finally get that call. And, you know, you always wonder if you can pitch there, you know, it's pretty amazing. You know, my first couple of years are kind of a blur, you know, I think, cause I pitched for my life every game, you know, I couldn't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
As much as I could later on, once you're more established and you got your job and, you know, whatever. So I kind of wish I was able to do is, you know, enjoy those first couple of years because, you know, like I said, we had a great team with the Astros, great guys. And, you know, like I said, I had two pretty good years, but it's hard to recall a lot of the stuff that went on that year just because I think I was so in a fog pitching for my life. I can't really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's almost like they throw you in the middle of the ocean and you're just trying to not drown, right?
Yeah, well, it's funny. So my debut, you know, so I get called up. And first night, I think it's 3-3 or 2-2 in the 10th inning to face Eric Karros, Mike Piazza, and Tim Wallach, my first three batters in the big leagues. So it's like, yeah, hey, welcome to the big leagues. Here you go. Back-to-back rookie of the years, Hall of Famer, and, you know, Wallach is having a pretty good year. You know, so it's like,
who was your catcher?
Scott Servais.
So he was a veteran by then?
Yeah, he had a few years in for sure. But I knew Scotty from the minor leagues as well. So luckily, you know, like I said, being so old in the minor leagues and playing, so I play with half the guys in the big leagues already just because, you know, I was younger than Bagwell and Biggio, and I was younger than most of the stars in Houston. You know, it's just like I said, I spent so much time in the minors.
So how'd you do in your first couple batters?
Well, we ended up getting a loss on an error. So it was an unearned run, thank goodness, but I got a loss. I think I gave a double and a single, then a pop out. And what was it? Maybe it was a single and a double because no one scored when I was in the game. They pulled me out. I think with two outs, we had an error. And then the winning run scored on an error. So I got a loss, but it was unearned, thank goodness. And then
did your family join you? Was your wife there?
No, my wife didn't. No one made it down because it was such late notice. And, you know, spending 7 years in the minors wasn't like I had extra money to fly anybody in.
That's too bad.
On minor league salary, yeah, unfortunately. But she ended up meeting me in Houston the following week. But, so my next game was, let's see, we're down by one to face Matt Williams with the bases loaded. So, I come in, face Matt. I strike out Matt Williams with the bases loaded. Jeff Bagwell's a two-run homer the next inning. So now I have two-thirds of an inning with a win and a loss. My first two games in the big leagues.
Did you get the ball from your first strikeout?
Yep. Not my first strikeout. I didn't. I didn't think about that. Dang it! At the time, I wish I would have. But I definitely got my first win, my first save, my first hit. It's kind of funny because my first hit against the Dodgers. My first win and save against San Fran, you know, so, you know, two of my former teams, or I take that back. I played with San Francisco a little bit later after my career. I kind of attempted a comeback, and I was with San Fran a little bit in spring training, but yeah, so it's kind of, you know, I still have those balls and the bat, the plaques and everything for, you know, all my firsts.
That's really cool. That's really cool. Now, you had luck in getting into the postseason near the end of your major league career with Cardinals and Cubs. Is postseason baseball different than regular season in your mind?
The first game it is. I remember, and maybe my first year, like 2000 in St. Louis. You know, I think just, you know, the atmosphere of, even though, you know, technically everybody says it's just another game, it's easier said than done taking it that way, you know, because obviously a little more on the line if you lose. But, I was pretty lucky, too. I think I had pretty good success. I think my first 9 or 10 games, I didn't allow a run. My first 9 or 10 postseason games. So, just the atmosphere, the electricity, the fans, it's crazy. And then, obviously, the 03 Cubs team was even more crazy, especially after the Steve Bartman and, you know, all that fiasco.
Were you in the stadium for that one?
Yeah, I was with the Cubs that year.
Were you down in the bullpen when that occurred? Or were...
Yeah. Actually, I just got back to the pen because, you know, I was like the sixth, seventh inning guy. And, you know, we had Cal Farnsworth and Borowski was our closer. And we have Brindlinger from the left side, who's a Trove guy. But, yeah, so seventh inning, eighth inning, I'm up in the clubhouse. I went to get a drink or something, and, you know, all the plastics up, champagne. We have three to nothing. Mark Firestone, a three-hit shutout. You know, I thought, you know, we're, you know, two innings away from the World Series. And, you know, I said, plastics up, everything. I'm tucking my shoes under, make sure nothing gets wet. And by the time I get back to the bullpen, you know, it got a little crazy the next inning. So, yeah, so I was down there about 50 feet from where all the action took place.
Wow, that's something. Were you a reliever coming up through the minors? Or
I started my first six and a half years in the minors.
Okay.
I was a starter. I think I did some relieving a little bit here and there. But for the most part, I started all the way through AAA. My first couple years in AAA, I was a starter. And then 91 with the Dodgers in AAA, I relieved a little bit. And then went to the Astros when the Dodgers released me in 92. I started relieving with the Astros full-time. And then I take that back. I might have started one or two, but, you know, a little bit. But mostly I was a reliever. And once I became a reliever, it's kind of weird because – you know, usually that's like a demotion, especially in the minor league. To, you know, hey, you lost your starting spot, now you're a reliever. But for me, I think just my personality and my nerves, it was so much better for me to be a reliever. Because those four days in between starts, or, you know, the day of my start, I'd go crazy.
Yeah, I think I would like that much better, being available every day or just about every day. And you're mentally always in the game. And
I totally agree. Yeah, it's kind of how it changed my whole – everything changed for me once I started relieving. And like I said, learning the split finger definitely helped. But and then the big leagues, yeah. So I had no start. That's just kind of funny. So probably my biggest – probably the thing I'm most proud of in the big leagues or my whole career, I think. From 95 to 2002, so a 7-8-year span, I let all relievers in the big leagues in innings pitched. And I think I was second to Rob Nen in the National League for games pitched, and that's in that 8-year span. So kind of pride myself on, you know, doing the little things and being, you know, like by trying to pass the – I coach high school right now. I coach a high school baseball team, and, you know, trying to have those kids, you know, you have to do something different to make yourself stand out, you know, to you know, because every level you go to, the competition, the talent gets pretty equal. You know, there's only a handful of superstars.
Sure.
So I'm trying to have, you know, just putting my guys, it's, you know, it wasn't because of my stuff where I was successful. I had to do the little things, you know, like I said, whether it was pitch every day, whether it was throw more than one inning, whether it was, you know, close the game out or mop a game up or whatever it might be, that was my thing, to make myself available, you know, to be out there every day as much as I could. And, you know, luckily, you know, I had pretty good success doing it, but, you know, that's why I had to do that to be in the big leagues, you know, because I wasn't throwing 95 plus and, you know, had the best, you know, curveball or slider or anything like that. I had a good split finger, but, you know, I had to do the little things to enable to, you know, to be successful and to stay.
Yeah, well, obviously, they were speaking with Dave Beers. Dave is a 10-year veteran of the major leagues. He pitched for the Astros, the Expos, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and he is one of the top 100 greatest Colorado Rockies. So that must have been a kind of a cool honor for the Rockies. Have had a lot of great players, and it must have been nice to be named as one of the 100 greatest Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. It's kind of funny. I'm not sure if it's changed since, but I think when that list came out, it's been a year or two. And I think I was number 43 or 40. I think I was just somewhere around that, right in that 40, 43 or 47. And when I pitched, that was my number, 43. I was 47 at the Rockies one year. And I was 43 everywhere else. So I always joke, I should have been number 10 or something around here. Because maybe I would have. Yeah, because the number I was chosen was the same number as my jersey.
Is there a reason you picked that as a number, or that was the number that they
gave you? That's just what they gave me. I got to the big leagues, and they gave me 43. I was 27. My favorite number was 27 coming up. You know, 16, high school and college, I was 16 because of Dwight Gooden. But then minor leagues, I tried to get number 27 for some reason, which I don't know why. And then once I got to the big leagues, I'll take whatever they'll give you.
I'll pay.
Yeah, I'll take any number. But you know, luckily, 43 was a good number. And then when I came to the Rockies, it was taken by a veteran. So obviously, usually service time gets priority. So I wasn't going to buy it by any means, or you know, give him a Rolex like some guys do. So I just took 47 while I was here, and then I was 43 everywhere else.
That's cool. Now you said earlier that you had some of the mementos. And I remember earlier from when you were playing, you have the first hit and the first win and the first save. Do you have uniforms?
Yes, jerseys. I have all my jerseys. At least, you know, I try to get at least one jersey everywhere I went, and then I would collect like team stuff. You know, try and get two or three from teammates. So luckily, you know, it was with the Astros. I got, you know, Bagwell and Biggio, and you know, when I went to Montreal, I think I got Pedro and Vladdy, and then Colorado got, you know, Dante, Vinny, Larry, Bichette probably. Because everywhere I went, so obviously St. Louis, you know, McGuire, Pujols, anything else I got there. Yeah, so, you know, but everywhere it's kind of like trying to get a couple jerseys from teammates and, you know, some ball. They got Pryor and Kerry Wood and Sosa while I was in Chicago. But
were you on the Cardinals when the McGuire home run?
No, that was before. That was with the Rockies then. So I almost gave up one of those. Thank goodness. I did, you know.
And it kept on going, right?
Yeah, no doubt. But yeah, luckily I was his teammate for the next 3 years. So, you know, he's one. It's kind of funny. He's one of the, you know, Hall of Famers or superstars who didn't take me deep. You know, it's like you give one to everybody. You know, Sosa hit one. Griffey hit one, Bagel hit one, Bonds hit one, Piazza hit one. It's like every one of the superstars hit one home run off me, it seemed like. And then, you know, a guy named Jeff Blum, who was a
for the Astros,
was probably my toughest guy. I think he was like 3 for 5 with 3 homers or something crazy like that. I could not get that guy out to save my life. But
were you guys teammates as well or no?
No, he was there after I was gone. But it's crazy. Like I said, I could throw whatever I wanted to, and he would take me deep. But then I think Bagwell was like 5 for 25 off me, you know. And
there's nothing to shame about there.
Oh, no. I'll take that. Trust me, I'll take that any day. But, you know, I said, you know, guys that, you know, not that he's not famous or anything, but, you know, Jeff Blum and, you know, the other guys, I think more contact guys give me problems for sure. You know, Tony Gwynn was tough out.
I'm sure he was tough out for everybody.
Yeah, no doubt.
Were you a collector growing up? Did you collect cards or?
Yeah, unfortunately, I not a whole lot. I mean, not as a young kid growing up, but when I got a little bit older, you know. But I collect mostly pitchers. I trade all the hitters for pitchers. So I try to get some good hitters just to get some pitchers out of their stash, but. And then once I got to the bigs, obviously, I really abused my privileges. So everywhere we'd go, I'd get, you know, 2 or 3 autographs from the other team as well.
That's right. That's so, now, is that frowned upon or is that encouraged or no one really?
You know, I don't think it's frowned upon per se. I'm sure the clubhouse guy doesn't like it because when you go to him, hey, can I get a couple balls every day? You might get tired of me getting some baseballs from him to get autographs, but you know, I don't think players mind. I know one time Tony Gwynn stopped me actually in my rookie year, second year, and usually you get the balls and you talk to the visiting guy or the ball boy and say, hey, can you go over and get, you know, these guys' autographs? And so we're switching infield, outfield, or BP. The Padres are coming off and we're going on. And Tony Gwynn stops me. He's like, hey, you know, Dave, just, you know, be more than happy to sign autographs for you. He goes, but I just like, ask me yourself. You know, he goes, I'd rather meet the player, get me autograph, and have you ask me yourself than just to do it with the ball boy or, you know, the clubhouse guy. He goes, so it's pretty cool. So he's like, yeah. He goes, you know, I'd be more than happy to sign for you, but just ask me yourself next, you know, kind of ask me yourself. It's, you know, kind of more of an honor that way.
So did you have a chance to meet some of the legends in St. Louis? You know, we're talking Banks, those guys.
Yeah, that's probably the best part. You know, like I said, you know, you didn't really get what baseball was until, you know, like I said, the Astros was great, Montreal. But, yeah, when you go to spring training, obviously the Rockies, you know, didn't have anybody really, you know, as a celebrity or a guest coach. But, yeah, you go to St. Louis and, you know, I closed for a year, so it's kind of cool. So I closed for a year, and Tony La Russa brings in Dennis Eckersley to kind of talk to me about being a closer, you know, kind of mentality and, you know, kind of whatever, just, you know, the closer role. So here you talk to him, talking to one of the best relievers and pitchers in baseball. And then next thing you know, I'm throwing a bullpen and working on my slider, and Bob Gibson comes over. And now we start talking sliders with Bob Gibson, who probably is one of the best sliders, if not the best ever, definitely one of the best sliders in the history of baseball.
So I think my head would have exploded.
Yeah, it was crazy. Literally, it's like I'm talking to Eckersley one day, Bob Gibson the next day, and here's Stan Musial and, you know, Lou Brock and Red Shanes, and it was crazy. Just you go down the list of, you know, superstars at the field. You know, it's pretty amazing. That's when you realize, like I said, what baseball is all about when you're in that atmosphere. And then you know, I'll see the sea of red at every game. It's crazy. You know, but the same way, you know, in Chicago, same way. And you got, you know, Fergie Jenkins and Ron Santo and Ernie Banks out there hanging out all the time at spring training. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, you get to really appreciate and, you know, enjoy the game. It's especially if you like that side of the game, you know, to sit and talk the history of it and see those players. And, you know, it's always tough to, you know, you might feel the same way, but it's hard to watch baseball nowadays sometimes just because how much has changed. And I'm definitely an old school, you know, National League needs to bat type. You know,
you're actually a pretty good hitter for a guy that didn't get up a lot.
I know, yeah. You know what? I'm not sure my 27 at-bats qualify for anything, but I think I hit almost 260, you know, in the big league. So, you know, I told Tony I should have batted more often. Trust me, hitting wasn't, you know, in high school it was my strong suit, but, yeah, once I got drafted and started pitching, and, yeah, I just didn't want to get killed. I got out of there as soon as I could.
Do you remember the first time someone asked you for an autograph?
Actually, I do, but it was one in the big leagues. It was weird. It was when I was 11 years old. I was playing in the Little League World Series, and I played for Europe. So my dad was in the Air Force, so we moved to Spain, and so I ended up making the All Star team, and I represented Europe in the Little League World Series. So that's the first time I really signed autographs was when I was 11 years old.
That must have been strange for an 11-year-old.
Yeah, but strange. But I tell you what, that was the best time. I wish it was as promoted and televised as it was now, as you know, back then as it is now, because just that experience was unbelievable. To do that as any age, but let alone as 11 years old and be in that atmosphere, and you know, it's like we're in the big leagues back then. It was pretty awesome.
How did you team do?
Not very good. I pitched the second game against, I think, New York, and I think we lost 8-0 or something. But and back then it was different. Back then it was only 8 teams made it. But now they have like 16 or 20 teams, and there's American pool and international pool. So back then you played everybody. So we played, you know, came from New York and – yeah, I said the game I pitched didn't go very well, but I was 11 years old, so I had a good time.
Oh, I'm sure that must have been a thrill. Did you keep the uniform from that then as well?
You know what? I didn't. I wish I have a T-shirt maybe. I had my hat for the longest time, but you know, somewhere along the years, or moving, or who knows where it's at somewhere. But my dad passed not too long ago, and he had a hat. Back then, they did exchange pins. So he had a hat, like his Little League baseball hat. And he probably had 50 pins on it because he's my coach. He coached our team. So he probably had 50 pins on it from, you know, Taiwan and, you know, Dominican Republic. So all teams, back then you exchange pins with other teams. So it's kind of cool, you know, seeing his hat with all those different pins on there in the countries that we played against.
That's really neat. Anyway, yeah. Do you? I understand you had a kind of a collector's find in your garage. We were cleaning out your garage, and you found some California League All-Star cards.
Yeah. I was going through. Like I said, we moved not too long ago, and still going through boxes and crap. And yeah, I found this box of cards, and you know the Cal League All-Star team was on there, and you know Griffey obviously was on that team. So it's kind of cool playing that Cal League. I think Gary Sheffield, no, I think that might have been the year before, but you know, that Cal League was pretty good caliber. So Gary Sheffield was down there, and obviously playing against Griffey was kind of cool that year. Yeah, because everybody knew who he was. Superstar right off the bat.
Sure. Did you keep cards from your playing days? Do you still have them?
Yeah, I still have most, you know, and I get them in the mail still every now and then. But yep. I think I have most of my minor league cards, and then obviously every big league card I have as well that I know of. I try and.
Did the card companies give you copies of your cards or?
Yeah, I think like Topps would give us a pack of 50 or something like that. If I remember right, they give us a pack of, you know, I think Topps would. That might be it that I can think of. But like just over the years of, you know, obviously when I first got to the big leagues, you know, I'd be the first guy at the baseball card shop trying to find my own card. When my first card came out, I was there every day waiting for, you know, and it was a Fleer. I think it was a Fleer. My first big league card was a Fleer from the 94 Astros. And yeah, I was there every day at the baseball card shop waiting for, you know, the new packs to come so I can get my first card. So it's kind of cool.
You and Pat Neshek, right?
Yeah, I wish I was as big as he was. Yeah, he's a serious collector.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. Now mentioned you get some requests through the mail. You still getting many requests for autographs through the mail?
You know, I'll get a couple a month, it seems like. And you know, kind of crazy. Like I said, I moved not too long ago, and I don't know where they got my new address.
We're very resourceful as a hobby.
I guess somehow they dragged me down again, but yeah, and I don't mind doing that. Obviously, it's you know, it's an honor to be able to, you know, as long as they say it's going for what they say it's going for in the letters. You know, sometimes those form letters are when it's Dear Mister, you know, then your name is printed in ink and everything else is like typed out. You know, where they handwrite your name in. You're my favorite player. You're, you know, so sometimes you wonder how legit it is and stuff, but it's hard to, you know, hard to turn it down.
Do you ever go on eBay to see what your stuff is going for?
No, I never do. Yeah, I never have, to be honest with you. I'd probably be too embarrassed. I start trying to bid it up. I'd be stuck with it.
Right. Now we met through the Trove Sports Den. Have you had great experience, dealing with the fans on the Trove?
Yeah, it's kind of cool. You know, it's kind of be able to interact and answer questions and tell stories and that side of the game that most people don't know about. You know, I always say when, you know, something goes on and, you know, they say, oh, I know him, you know, I know him too well, or he wouldn't do that, or. You know, like, unfortunately, most players, you know, most fans don't really know the players. You know, they probably know the person they want you to know. You know, so I think, you know, with this Trove, it's kind of cool to, you know, be able to interact. And, you know, I said, you know, I saw Rimlinger put a story on today about, you know, when he first met Will Clark. Not when he first met him, but, you know, when he faced him and he had to hit him. And then, you know, funny, so I posted a picture of the 2000 Cardinals when we swept the Braves, me and Will Clark going to hug. So it's kind of cool to be able, you know, like I said, for fans to see, you know, get a more personal side and, you know, different stories that they might not hear or see anywhere else. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, the former players have been really proactive about things and telling stories. And, you know, Roger Davis is there, and
yeah,
Remlinger is there, and Ryan LaVarnway. There's a bunch of guys that always that's what I love. I love seeing the stories. The, you know, someone drops a kernel or asks a question, and then all of a sudden, you know, this five or eight guys that are telling the story about it. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Plus, even me, I didn't know half of these stories, that guy tell either about their first call up or their first games, or, you know, I've never posted anything about my, first call up experience too, which I probably should, because it's, kind of cool. And I enjoy the fact that I faced the Dodgers after they released me. So kind of cool to get that revenge.
The thing that always intrigues me is kind of the inside stuff. Like I like, hearing like Sean Casey talk about when the guys come to first base and they swap stories about what's going on. Can you tell me a funny story about a mound meeting, or the coaches come out and there's five guys from the infield all hanging around? Is there a funny story you can tell about us?
I don't have a real funny one that I can think of. I think because most of the times when a coach came to talk to me, I was either in trouble. I guess maybe Tony. I remember, because especially when you're pitching late in the game, it's usually the game's on the line. So I was either struggling because it was about to lose, or he was mad at me. So I don't think he was trying to be too funny. But at one time we're playing the Reds, and and Albert got hit a couple times. And so, I must not have been a safe situation, because when they called down, say, hey, get Dave ready, he's going to pitch the last inning. I told our bullpen coach to tell him, hey, I'm going to hit somebody, because they've hit Albert a couple times, kind of just to protect him and retaliate. And Tony likes to control that part of the game, so I thought, well, I better tell him, let him know what's going on. So he calls back, says, no, don't do anything, we'll get him next time. And so I go out there, first batter. And throw the ball like right behind his neck, and the benches are going crazy because they're yelling at Tony, thinking that Tony called for me to do it. Tony comes out to the mound, and he's like, "What in the world are you doing? I told you not to retaliate." He's like, "I swear, Tony, it slipped." He's like, "No." He's like, first of all, you don't call down so you're going to drill somebody, and then you throw it behind a guy's head, and you tell me it slips. So I'm not sure he's mad because they're mad at him, thinking he called for it, or that actually, threw the guy on purpose. But yeah, I swear to this day, the ball actually slipped out of my hand. But maybe subconsciously, I was thinking I want to drill somebody, and I threw behind him on accident / purpose, I guess.
Did you ever get drilled personally when you were hitting?
Never when I was hitting. Not in the big leagues, because I was, thank goodness, because I was scared to death. My first move was probably in the bucket to get out of the way and just swing as hard as I could to get out of there. Pitching, I never did either. Tripper Jones almost killed me one time. Comebacker, like, cut the ball in my face. He cut the ball right in my face. But, I was pretty lucky for the most part. I never really got hit, when I was pitching. But, it's crazy. It's definitely... When that does happen, it's kind of scary watching, a guy that last couple weeks ago got hit, and it's not a you hate to wish out, especially nowadays. Guys are so strong, balls coming off 100 plus miles an hour.
No, I know that's
I can't imagine
part of the game. I would think from a pitching standpoint, you're 60 feet 6 inches away, and then that ball comes at you pretty quick.
Yeah, as I said, literally, I don't know how I caught the ball chipper hit, because it was right at my face. And it probably, I guess, you're quicker than you thought, when it's self-defense for your life.
Well, we're speaking with Dave Beers. Dave is a 10-year veteran of major leagues. He pitched for five teams. And as I said, he is nominated or awarded one of the top 100 greatest Colorado Rockies. He had a stellar career and saved 95 games during his career. Never started a game, but was a pretty good hitter as well in his day. And now he's coach of a high school baseball team in his area. And we became acquainted through the Trove Sports Den, and I recommend you guys go check out the Trove Sports Den. This isn't a commercial for the Trove. You can go check it out. It's really cool. You can interact with all sorts of former Major League players like Dave, and there's all sorts of stories, and it's just a kind of a neat, different experience. So I recommend you guys checking out the Trove Sports Den at thetrovesportsden.com. Dave, is there anything you want to mention that we didn't talk about tonight?
I don't think so. No, I think we covered quite a bit. I enjoyed it, though. I appreciate, you know, you having me on and, you know, be able to hopefully entertain some people. But, yeah, I enjoy, you know, talking about the playing days. It's definitely, you know, being able to reminisce and tell stories and, you know, hopefully, you know, give fans a different side of the game that they don't necessarily see or hear about.
Yep, Dave is on Twitter as well. Dave, you want to give your Twitter handle out? Just in case?
I think it's Dave Beers or DBeers43.
Okay.
I'm not sure I should be honest with you what my name is. What my Twitter handle
is. And Dave's also on Facebook. So
It is at DBeers43.
Okay, at DVRS43, at DVRS43 on Twitter. If you want to follow Dave on Twitter, he's also on Facebook. And Dave, do you want to mention about your post playing career? Is that something you want to bring up? Or
well, I mean, besides coaching, I coach a high school team here in Denver, like I said, called Cherry Creek, and I do that. And I have an LED light company, so that kind of keeps me busy during the day. Besides my two grandkids. You know, so I went from pitching baseball to pitching light bulbs is what I always say. So, so I do that for my real job. And like I said, I enjoy, you know, I coach and I do that, you know, year round pretty much now. So right now we're starting our fall ball, and actually our teams are, I coach the 17 and 18s. We're, you know, we have two different teams, and one team is 11-1 and one team is 10-2. So
nice.
We're doing pretty well right now. And we, you know, we have three or four more weeks before we take the winter off and get ready for, well, our spring's going to be weird this year, too, because our spring season was pushed back about a month and a half. So instead of starting in February, March, we don't start until, you know, like April, middle of end of April. So it's going to be kind of interesting as of right now, unless this COVID stuff kind of straightens up and we can get back to normal.
I know. We all hope that will. Well, I wish you the best of luck in coaching. Congratulations on your grandkids, who I hear in the background.
Yeah, she just walked in my room. She just came in, my 1-year-old.
All right, well, I will let you get to your family. I appreciate your time. It was a pleasure talking baseball and talking collecting and talking autographs with you. Again, if you guys want to check out Dave, he is on Twitter, he is on Facebook, and you can interact with him on the Trove, thetrovesportsden.com. Guys, check it out. It actually is a really fun site. So, again, Dave, thank you very much for your time.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Anytime. I'll be more than happy to, you know, waste some time with you.
All right. I'm sure I'll have you back on the show.
Awesome. I appreciate it.
All right. You have a great night.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Well, that wraps up another edition of TTM Cast, the podcast for the TTM Autograph Collector. My name is Jeff Baker, and I have been your host for the program. I want to thank you for hanging in there with us this week. We had a nice long show with our interview with Dave Veers. I'd like to thank Mr. Veers for joining us today. I'd like to once again congratulate Mr. Adam Kay and Sam Kay, no relation, for winning free authentication from North Carolina Authentication Service and Grading. And Mr. James York for donating that. Once again, if you want to go check out James's brand new authentication company, it is ncasg.biz. Check it out. He has very, very affordable new authentication service for autograph authentication. And it can be on cards, it can be on pictures, it can be on memorabilia, it can be on just about anything. And his fees are really affordable. So once again, Mr. James York, thank you for donating the prize this week. Our next show will be next Sunday, September 20th. Good luck to everyone this week in their fantasy football. It's the first week of the NFL season. Hopefully your team wins. Looking forward to watching Tom Brady play on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this week. And hopefully we have a great week. Good luck if you've got any teams in the NBA playoffs still, or NHL playoffs, and it's hopefully be a good week for everyone. So once again, I want to thank you guys for hanging in there. Please spread the word, let people know what we're doing, tell people about the podcast. Hopefully you're enjoying it as much as I am enjoying making it. So as always, wishing you many happy returns. See you next week.